Welcome to Right Here in Mass. We're a weekly podcast that features individuals throughout the Bay State who are on our radar and should be on yours. From the Berkshires to Boston, Cape Cod and the islands, tune in to learn about who you should know right here in Mass. Welcome to another episode of Right Here in Mass. I'm super excited to be joined by Manessa Konecki today. Manessa is a trailblazer in reshaping work culture, infusing joy and fulfillment into the heart of professional life by optimizing efficiency flows. With over 20 years of expertise in research administration, they are a seasoned strategist who passionately empowers through their innovative Commitment to Clockout series on YouTube. Their passion lies in harmonizing the life cycle management of research awards with work-life integration. As a proud member of the LGBTQIA+ community, with deep DESI roots, Manessa embodies diversity and empathy in every endeavor. They currently reside with their wife, Alex, and three dogs in a seaside cottage in Plymouth on unceded and occupied lands of the Wampanoag people. Manessa, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited. I've been wanting to be on your show for a while, so I'm glad I finally got the in. Which, as it turns out, would send you an email and say, hey, I want to be on your show.
It was as easy as that.
It was really easy.
Well, I'm super excited to have you here, and I would love if you could start off by sharing with our listeners more about yourself, what you do, what led you to where you are today, all of that fun stuff.
So I actually moved to Boston, once upon a time, many years ago. I actually moved to Boston in 1998 from Pakistan. And that was around the same time that I fell into research administration. So a lot of the things related to my life, my career, everything all happened at once. And it's funny because when you're younger, you don't really think about the choices that you make. You're kind of just like, oh, look, there's something fun over there. I'll go do that thing. And when I look back now, I can see how from the moment I got to the States, I knew I wanted to live in the South Shore. Like, I've always wanted to live in I had no idea how I was going to do it. And then two, very quickly after that, I was a temp. I was bouncing at the Paradise. Yes, I was a bouncer at the Paradise. For all y'all who was there in 2002 to 2004, I was there. I was also working as a research administrator at the Brigham and Women's Hospital. And I was so young and didn't know anything about work. And I was temping. And I would actually like leave from my bartending job to go into work. Like, I was very unprofessional, which is totally fine. Like, it's all good. I was good at my job. But I found a deep passion for research administration, which doesn't sound like the sexiest job in the world, but like, I think it's so fun. It's like a party every day. It's always unexpected. And essentially, I manage research grants for Harvard hospitals I've worked at over the years at the Brigham and the BI and that. But then I've also worked as a consultant for small biotech companies that get the challenge with biotech companies is a lot of times they'll get smaller grants. They'll get like grants from the government, but they don't know how to keep those grants, or they don't know how to spend the grants compliant. It's like, oh, we got a grant. Well, now what? Now you got to spend it and be compliant. So I really enjoy finding people when they're in that space of, I've just fallen into research administration, I'm terrified, or we just got our grant and we need to make sure we're compliant. And there's a moment of like panic and chaos, because this is not small stuff. This is stuff where like, oh my God, they're going to take away all my money. I like to be able to support people in that space because I've been doing it for 25 years. And at this point, I've seen everything. And so rather than be an RA in an organization, I like to be the person who is like, oh my God, you're having a crisis. Don't worry. I will help you like your fairy grandmother. And then I will leave.
I love that, fairy grandmother.
That's right. It's like, you know what? I was like, I just like the term fairy grandmother. It's like, that's what I think I'm going to make myself one of those little like, the magnets, you know, that's a sleeping beauty type thing, like an enamel magnet. That'd be fun.
Oh, yes. I love that. I love that you support both groups of people. So like you mentioned, the people who are in research administration, who have that as a career and are just trying to figure it out, but then also those organizations who are getting those grants and are trying to figure out what exactly they can do with them. And you're really there to step in and support them.
And as I like doing with both, because ultimately, I've been doing this now long enough to where I see myself as sort of like the person who is meant to facilitate the next generation of whatever it is that's happening, right? So like, I'm probably only gonna be doing this another 10 to 15 years. And as long as I'm doing that, I have a limited time to be able to leverage my expertise to make life better, because I've already walked the walk and suffered. Why should anybody else have to suffer? I suffered for you. We're good.
Yes, absolutely. And if I remember correctly from when we first chatted a few weeks ago, as of this recording, you've gone through some changes in your business. Like you've made some shifts and whatnot. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I went from having a giant business making six figures a year, shutting the whole thing down and starting fresh. It was a big step.
Yeah. So let's actually talk about that, because I feel like that's conversations that I've been hearing over the past year or so, where people are just kind of ready to throw in the towel, so to say, with their business. I mean, some people are leaving entrepreneurship and going to the corporate route. People are changing their business entirely because they're just realizing it's not something that's working for them. So I'd love to hear more about what it was that you were doing and also what kind of prompted that change.
This is such a fun story. So one of the things that I've always been really good at is making money. Like I see opportunities, I figure out, okay, this is how we can do it. And I like helping other people do that too. I'm temporarily challenged, so we might get the years messed up a little bit, but we'll just generally say a long time ago. So a long time ago, I was working with small business owners and helping them to basically complete their user journey so that they were able to convert faster and better. And at the same time, I was doing research administrative consulting. I had a lot of things that I was doing, and I was very active, and there was money coming in from multiple streams. I'd done all the things that people say you do. You know, you build the money from, you build your income from multiple streams, you do this, you do that. And I had developed this, like, and I think this, and I've seen this happen to many entrepreneurs, where we start to scale up because people say that's what you should do. And so I did it. And then I kept getting bigger and more clients. And then I hired like 10 people and I was going to have a whole staff. I remember I've had like five staff meetings, I think in all, five staff meetings total before I shut everything down. And I realized that there was nothing that was going to sate this lust for money that I was feeling in my body, but that I also really hated that feeling. There was something wrong. And at the exact same time, I happened upon Toy Marie Smith, who is a brilliant, brilliant thought leader in terms of how do you decondition yourself from capitalism, colonialism. And I was fascinated by this idea that I could build a business based off of my mission, my life mission, which is to help people find joy and create. Like, I believe that privilege is something that it's not my privilege. I have it now, but I want to bring more people in. I want to throw more ladders down. How can I create opportunities? So like, that's my life mission, is to help create opportunities for others. But that's not really a big money making, you know, it's not like that's not, and that wasn't my goal, right? And my goal, I realized, was to be able to have freedom to spend my time on these things. And I had a specific set of type of income that I needed to be able to live, right? So like, you know, because you got to pay bills, life is a thing. And so in meeting with Toy, I realized I actually needed to shut everything down because everything was getting out of control. I was scaling, I was growing, I was making money, but I was almost frenetic in that, because like it was just all happening and I just didn't really have a whole lot of control. So I shut everything down and took like a year to hibernate. And in that hibernation time, I restructured how I wanted to show up in the world. I figured out how I wanted to make my money, who I wanted to charge, who do I not want to charge, how do I want to help people, right? And I redid everything. And now it's only taken me, I would say, about a full year to revamp the whole thing and even turn my ship. But I'll tell you, I feel I barely work anymore, honestly. I shouldn't say anything, but like now I only work about 20 hours a week. And, awesome. But all of my other time is spent on, like, I work in terms of this is paying me money, but then the rest of that time goes on free calls for people, talking to me, you know, hosting my Patreon, where I give out free information for research administrators. Like, how can I give away this knowledge to the people who need it to try to build these bridges? It was a difficult path. And it was very, very intentional, and I needed guides. I could not have done this without three or four different coaches that I worked with at any given time, because I had to decolonize my brain. I had to even realize that this was a thing that could be, like, I didn't even know how to think like that. I needed a whole 6 months in my therapist just to figure out, what am I even saying?
Wow. Would you say that with that, it was also burnout that kind of led you to it, or was it more so just wanting freedom and just wanting to be able to do like exactly what you do now, only have to focus on working 20 hours a week so that you can spend those remaining 20 hours or however long you want, really giving back and doing things that light you up.
I would say for me, it was not as much burnout because I've worked in the burnout space for the last, 5 or 6 years. And so I've been very careful about how that is. So I would not say it's burnout in the typical sense.
Yeah.
But I would say that it was burnout in the fact that our society keeps you constantly with the belief that it's not enough, whatever it is that you do. So even if you're not doing, even if I'm not working 50 hours a day, I still feel that sense of it's not enough. And that is where that comes from. So I think that there were a lot of those same symptoms that would show up, but the infrastructure of the way that we're set up to work. So it's actually really interesting as we're saying this, right? Because the infrastructure of work keeps you running to where you have no choice but to burn out. So if you are living conscientiously and trying not to, you're really doing the things to not burn out, you are inherently working against what the system is already, and there's that cognitive dissonance. So I would actually say that I was probably feeling a difficult tension about how do I exist in this, in the real world, while also trying to do this thing that I'm trying to do. And it was very uncomfortable. So I think, there was an element of burnout, but not the way that one would typically think.
And I feel like you hit the nail on the head with that, because that's something I know I feel too, is that doing all these things and I'm like, well, what more could I be doing? Or what could I do next? And then it's like, I have to force myself to sit with myself and reflect on everything that I've done and been like, wait a second, I've already done so much. Why can't I just be at peace with what's already been accomplished, rather than trying to chase that next thing? And I feel like that's something that, exactly like you said, I mean, society kind of sets people up to have that belief and kind of just automatically fall into that work ethic, and it's challenging. So I applaud you for kind of getting out of that hamster wheel and really doing the work to kind of focus on the next steps for yourself.
Thank you. It was brutal. And I'll tell you, actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because I have this conversation more and more with my clients. There was one person who came to me and she said, I'm thinking of getting a second job. And I was like, okay. I was like, how come? And so I was trying to sort of understand where this is coming from. And so eventually, I said, I have to ask, is this a money thing? Do you need more money? Cause I was like, cause the career that you have, you could make more money moving to a different job. So you still would need to get a second job. What is it that's happening? And she said, well, my job is kind of easy and I have time. And she said, I feel like I should just have, I have free time, so I should be working. And that's really the crux of it, is when we have even a moment to ourselves, the first thing we think is, what should I be doing? And it's always related to some sort of productivity activity. Yeah. And that is exhausting.
It is. And so when you took that year, and I love that you said that you worked with 3 or 4 coaches throughout that process to help you figure out those steps. What was that year like for you? I imagine it was a lot of working on yourself and relearning and kind of figuring out what exactly you can do to live out your life's mission.
You know what? It was twofold. On one hand, it was brutal. My friend Sherry calls it an unbecoming, you just literally unbecome. And we've unbecome ourselves multiple times, I think, in our lifetimes. Once you hit 47, you've done it a couple times already at various points in your life. And, I think that at this stage, what was delicious about it was that, one, I have a fabulous support system. I went into it intentionally this time. So every other time I've ended up on the floor having to unbecome, it's not been a deliberate choice. It's just something terrible has happened that has forced me into this position. But this was really a choice. And so I had the real privilege of being able to do it very slowly and deliciously. And so I was able to be very thoughtful about it. So it was brutal in that you're constantly finding things that you're like, God, this is conditioning too. Yeah. And this too, and different ways in which it manifests in your life and how it shows up without even realizing how insidious some of these ideas are about worth and value and productivity. And I took a full-time job during that time because I wanted to hibernate. And I am glad I did, even though it had a damaging experience, impact on me. And the reason why I'm glad I did is because I saw the pressures that people deal with in corporate America that don't exist when you're not in corporate America. And it's intense. It is really, really intense. And I had been out for so long, I hadn't really fully appreciated how intense it could be. So I'm actually kind of glad for that, because part of the brutality of unbecoming and being that vulnerable and all of those things, I also had to see what people are actually grappling with. in this space, right? Like what's, and I felt it.
Yeah.
On the other hand, as someone who is 47, who's done this several times before, who did it intentionally, it was so fun because you're like, you know what you're doing. You know, you're going to get through it. Like there is, I have a confidence and belief in myself now that I developed over the last couple of years, I would say, that didn't exist before, where I just know it's whatever it is, I'll figure it out. It doesn't matter what happens, whatever it is, I'll figure it out. And so it was actually really fun. So at the same time as it was, oh my God, why am I doing this? It was also like, oh my God, I'm doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's nice to kind of have that dual feeling of, oh my gosh, am I really doing this? And then also, oh my gosh, I'm really doing this.
I know, right? You're like, oh my God, I'm doing it.
Oh, I love that. And what would you say has come out of making that huge shift and going through that transformation that you've gone through?
Oh my God. Can I tell you the most beautiful thing that has come out of it is the people that I have met, the community that I have built is so, there's something that happens when you show up the way I show up. You're very visible. People see you and they see you almost like a lighthouse. You're a giant blue, red, purple lighthouse. And they're like, I see you. I have ideas too. I'm coming to you. And what's really brilliant is that I felt really alone for a long time, as did a lot of the people in my community. But because of the, because you shed a lot of layers, right? You shed a lot of societal expectations. And so now I kind of show up the way I show up. And I know that if someone doesn't take me seriously, that's their mistake because someone else will take me seriously, right? But that's not something I had before. And the people in my community that are finding me are people who are inspiring me because they're so fucking brilliant. And so I am now being forced to level up, constantly learn more, be better. And I feel like my community has changed. I feel like my capacity. Oh, you know what? I said, these are the words I said the other day to Sheva. I said, after going through the painful part of the process, my capacity for love has increased 100-fold. And I'm able to then show up for people in love. Like really, I show up in that I love you and I want to help you. Yeah. Whereas before I felt embarrassed saying that. I felt embarrassed being like, I don't even know you. How can I love you? It's like, I do love you and I want to help you. Right. And like, that's what I have is a capacity to love very freely without fear of like the pain, you know, because that's why a lot of us don't do that is because of the pain of rejection or pain of whatever. Right. I am okay with, it's like somebody may come back in and I'll be like, all right, they'll just, I'm a soft, fluffy, like Teflon. It'll bounce right off. It'll be okay.
Right. And what you're sharing really reminds me of the whole notion of you attract what you put out. So all that energy that you're putting out is all coming back to you and kind of having that continuous circle, which I think is really magical because like you've mentioned, you've built such a close community and it's all due to what you've done and being able to kind of show up as you are and know that the right people will come to you because of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's been really fun. And what I love most is now, like the hope is that I will not be the weirdest person in the room in like 2 years. The hope is that I'll go into a room and be like, oh my God, you are so much weirder than I am. I fucking love this right now. Let's do this. It's like, that's how we all lift up. It's like, okay, let's do it.
Right? Like letting go of those expectations, those standards, those what we're supposed to do, and instead doing what we want to do and being able to really live that out in the way that we'd like to.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love that. And with the people that you work with specifically, have you really honed in on that research administration group? Or do you ever find that you work with like small business owners in other industries? Or I'd love to hear more about the types of people that you're here to support and uplift.
So I typically work with, and this is interesting you bring that up, and then I typically only work with, I only market to. Research administrators, academia, healthcare, biopharma who have these grants, because marketing messages can get weird if you start to bring other people in and other like, and I work with this and this. So I'm very specific about the research administration and that's sort of the direction I go in. However, my other passion is my local community, the space that I live in, the place that I call my home, right? And so I'm heavily involved in the South Shore Conference for Women and the South Shore Women's Business Network, specifically to use these, because these skills are the same. Like I've used them in boutiques. I've used them at biopharma, big companies, small companies, like this kind of idea, it translates. And so in my capacities with the SSWBN and with the conference, I work with a lot of small business owners. So I have a call, a 30-minute call that anyone can just book with me. And we sit and we talk and you tell me what's your problem with your business. Because my gift is this. I can talk to you about your business. You will say, these are my problems. I'll say, you're right. Or I'll say, no, these are your problems. And then I can connect you with the people who can help you solve them. So going back to what we talked about earlier, I had a bunch of coaches. And there was a time in my life where I thought that my career was going to be, I was going to help all the people with all the things. And so during this time, I was going to become an intimacy coach, a money mindset coach, a health coach. There were just so many coaches I was going to be. And then I realized, because I could see what the problems were. Like, so when someone comes to me with research administration or business, my matrixy mind kind of puts it together and says, this is the issue. But I very quickly realized I actually can't solve the problem. I can't even help you solve the problem. I actually have a giant army of people that I know that I can connect you with the people who can solve the problem. So to that effect, I actually do help a lot of people in various different spaces because I like to be able to say, okay, this is where you're at. I can connect you with this person, and this person. And then they know where to go and what to do. Because I think the biggest challenge that I found when I was a business coach is the question everybody came to me with to a person. I don't know what to do next.
Yeah.
I'm stuck. Something isn't working. And what they need is a Dr. Konicky diagnosis that says, I've diagnosed your problem. Here's where you go. Because that creates the hope. And then someone else guides them down the path. But I'm there for like a brief split second that I come in and I'm like, hi, I'm a flame. I'm gone. Okay.
Yeah. And I think that's really powerful because you're able to support these business owners with identifying what that problem or challenge is to begin with, and then saying, I have the solution for you, even though it might not be me. I have this great group of people that I can refer you to and send off their way. And then I imagine that you feel really good about the fact that you're sending referrals and sending connections to the people that you admire and that are in your community as well.
I love that. There's nothing I love more than connecting people across communities. And so I hired a PR coach many years ago who said, you're not ready for a PR coach right now. And I was just telling this story earlier because she was the one I hired, I think meeting 3 of the 5 meetings before I shut down my business, right?
Oh my gosh.
And so I'm talking to her and she said, you're not ready. And she said, I don't know that you even want to do this. And that's when we started talking and she was the one who made me realize and for her that this was that I needed to rethink this. And she said to me, the most important thing that you're going to be able to do, regardless of what direction you go in, is build your local community, your local network. There is no better way for you to grow your business than that. She's like, I've been working with people for 20 years and they're all trying to scale to the whole country. They know everyone needs to stop that. Focus on your local community. And so for me, I love getting to know more businesses in the local community so that I can then refer them out, right? Because my ultimate goal is to refer community members to community members so that we really intensify that gravy of Massachusetts together.
Yes.
Tiny South New England.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we both have such a, or anyone really who's a part of Massachusetts Business Network just has such a soft spot for Massachusetts and being able to work with people in the community and build friendships and relationships. It's like such a great feeling. And being able to just kind of, like you said, have that gravy across, I think is such a gratifying and rewarding experience.
It's why I love what you do. Like when I found your site, well, the most exciting thing was all the list of events that you have up there where you sort of, because it's like, it's if somebody doesn't know where to go, you bring together a whole group of different disparate types of groups and they're all their events so that there's an opportunity for someone to find a place that fits for them anywhere in Massachusetts, regardless of what it is that their particular interest is.
Absolutely. And I love the advice that you shared that you got from your PR coach about the importance of building that local community and being able to really scale your business on the local level, not necessarily looking in all these different parts of the country. And I know you mentioned your huge involvement in the South Shore Women's Business Network, as well as the South Shore Conference for Women. And so I'd love to hear more about your roles within those organizations and what inspired you to really join them and take part.
Well, Jordan Corcoran, who was my PR person there, she's the one who inspired me to join because she said what she did about local businesses. And I also, you know what else it is? I have, growing up in Pakistan, we had a really tight-knit community where everybody kind of knew each other in the area. I mean, it was a giant city of 15 million people, but in my little area, everybody kind of knew each other. And I haven't had that kind of experience since coming to the States. Like there was something that was missing. No matter where I lived, and I've lived up and down Massachusetts, I just, even though I'm sure the towns were great, I just didn't, have that feeling. And I was like, you know what? Plymouth feels like home. I want to build roots here. And so I was like, I will try to find a networking group. And so I tried a few. I stuck with SSWBN because what I loved about this particular group from the beginning, and now I'm about to be the incoming president next year, so this is how we've sort of moved in over the years, was that the entire membership understands the assignment of a networking group, which is, I'm not here to sell to you, networking group person. I'm here to educate you on what I do so that you can sell me. When you are in other places and people say, oh, I need a research administrator, or, oh, hey, I'm miserable about X and I need help. Oh, you know, Manessa, or I'm looking for, you know, local networking. Well, you've got Ashley and Manessa, right? So like, there's a lot of different ways in which people network. But I think that networking at some point became this space where you go in and you're pitching to everybody in there. And that is obviously, those of us who are good at it know that that's not how it works. And so what I love about SSWBN is everybody who's in there already knows that. Yeah. And when we bring new people in, I meet with them as a membership chair now, and we have a conversation about how it works and what we do and how we amplify you. And what's been really great is it's been consistently growing. So if you're in the South Shore of Massachusetts and you are looking for an opportunity to build your network, the SSWBN is a fabulous, fabulous place to do it. And we're completely inclusive. So as long as you identify as a woman, you're welcome. And in fact, we actually, I'm non-binary and I'm in it, and we have some dudes too. So the other is the South Shore Conference for Women, which I ended up in afterwards. And I just thought it was so interesting. What an interesting idea for a hyper local conference. And so soon on the heels of Jordan telling me that I needed to be local, I thought to myself, this can't be a coincidence. So Jen Masita, I met her, and I have a podcast. It's episode 75 of Stop Shitting All Over Yourself. If anyone, you just have to hear her story and how she started the conference and why she started the conference. It's just, it's really captivating. But her mission to unite women and elevate women and uplift women, I am the sort of person who, when I find somebody who's doing something that I adore, my literal thing becomes, tell me what I can do to make, I think I said the same thing to you. I will do whatever you need me to do to help make this happen or help amplify or whatever, because it always helps to have more engines. Right. So like, yes, you're doing so much of the work. If someone's like, I have a little engine, I'm going to come and put it. Like, it's just, you're like, oh my God, I can like stop kicking for just a split second. And so I wanted to help her with that. And what I loved about the conference is that it is an intense one day event, $52. She keeps it very accessible, but the purpose is for you to meet people in your region. So she has them in Western Mass and in Merrimack Valley, and now on in Kansas City too. I helped get that one set up. Yeah, there was, so last year at the conference, we started it and then handed them off to Jen, and then they did it. And I'm like, wow, they just had it. Yeah. So my sister's going to do the one in Merrimack Valley. So like, we have
fun.
I know, right? It's like, oh my God, this is so fun.
Family affair.
It is. And I'd love to get more people involved, because it does something that a bigger conference doesn't do, which is a bigger conference, there's like thousands of people, and then you see somebody and you're like, oh, I'm so excited. But then you go home and you may not talk to them again, or you may not see them again, or you message. But like, if somebody's down the street, you can just get coffee.
Yes.
And if you're in the South Shore, the way I recommend doing it is go to the conference, join the SSWBN, and then everyone you meet at the conference, you then get to springboard that with in the SSWBN over the course of the year. I've been doing that. And my goal was, when I first moved to South Shore, was I want people to know me everywhere I go. Within 1 year, I was walking down the street, and I'll never forget this, from across the street. I was on Court Street and I was walking by the locksmith, and somebody goes, hi. And I was like, and I'm not wearing my glasses, so I don't know who it is. And there's another person who's like, oh my God. So there's two people that I'm not sure who they are because I can't see them. And I'm ignoring them because I didn't really hear them say my name. And Allie's like, Manessa, they're talking to you. And I was like, to me? And she's like, yeah. And they're like waving at me, and I'm like, oh my God, it's happening. It's happening. They know me.
Oh, I love that.
That's how you build community. And it's funny because these two organizations are set up to help you do it. Believe it or not, I'm an introvert. I'm terrified of people. I have anxiety and PTSD. Believe me when I say that these organizations are literally set up to help you no matter how much you suffer.
Oh my gosh. I love that. And I especially love that there's such a core focus on the South Shore, because I feel like you can also relate to this being on the South Shore. But when I hear of these events that sound great, but I'm like, oh, it's in Boston. And I'm like, do I really want to drive into the
That's so
city,
far away.
right? And fight the commuter traffic and fight for a parking spot and all of this stuff. And it's daunting. And for me, I feel like that's a barrier where I'm more likely to not attend something in Boston because of that. So when I see all these local events, all the stuff on the South Shore that's happening, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing because it's right in my backyard.
Exactly. And people do not understand, if you have not done that trip, you do not understand what the traffic is like in the summers. It is. And you have to don't. And like, so the other day I went to the dispensary and I forgot that it was Friday at like 4, and I'm driving la 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 la. And then suddenly like traffic like stops. Yeah, I was in it for like half an hour. I'm like, this
and
is
you're
not
like
smart.
Cape traffic, Boston yeah. traffic. It's like you just can't beat it because every part of the year it happens.
When I first moved to the States, oh my God, my sister and I lived in like up north. She lived in New Hampshire, I lived in Waltham. And we would drive up and we'd listen to traffic on the threes. And I will never forget listening to traffic on the threes and them saying, and now we're on the bridge and the Cape Bridge and the traffic is going back up for 14 miles. And it's like, and Sire and I would be like, we're never living there.
Oh
never.
My gosh.
And inside, I'm like, please let me live there.
Oh, I love that. No, a fun question. Like, what made you choose Plymouth specifically? I know you wanted the South Shore, but what made you realize that Plymouth is where you really wanted to settle down?
I honestly, it was my spirit. My spirit tells me when something is, so I have like this, you know, my muscle testing. And so when something is going to happen, I know that I'm there and I know that there's so like, there is something about Plymouth that I recognize. I think I lived here once as like a duck. Or like I've not lived here human. I don't think I've lived here, maybe even a tree. Like, but I feel like I know this bay. Like I know this area, right? There's something about here that's familiar. And so having been so far from where I grew up, right? There is a feeling that is missing when you're not on the land you grew up in. It's a very different thing. And I mean, a lot of people live on the land they grew up in, so they don't necessarily, but if you've traveled or been away, you know that when you land in your hometown, there's a feeling that comes and you're like, right, I'm home. And Plymouth was the place that I felt that with.
Oh,
and
I
so
love
I was
that.
Just, so I knew I would live here. I didn't know how. There was no way we could afford it. There was no like there, but then a series of events happened that kind of just made it possible. And so suddenly we're living here and we're like, oh, okay, we did it.
Yeah.
Yay, oh my God, I'm doing it.
Oh my gosh. And Plymouth is one of my favorite spots. I mean, there's so much to do, so many great local businesses that we'll be chatting about, but it's like, I feel like it has so much to offer. It's like such a great gem, really, in the state of Mass.
I absolutely love it. We did think about Marshfield for a brief bit. And I think Marshfield would have been great if we had kids because you have all like, it's so cute and you have, but it felt like it might be a little quiet.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I mean, we live in a pretty quiet area, but it was always going to be Plymouth. Plymouth, it was always you.
Oh, I love that. So I'd love to hear, like, if someone's interested in working with you. I know you've chatted about your giving back to the community, being able to chat with business owners about their struggles, and also having the research administration expertise that you offer. I'd love to hear how someone can work with you if they'd like to explore that industry, or if they're just looking for support with whatever challenges they're facing.
What I would recommend is find me on Manessa.com or Manessa.tv, and you can always reach out to me there on LinkedIn. I am Manessa Konecki on everything, Manessa.Konecki. Feel free to, I have a book an appointment call. You're welcome to just schedule a time with me. And I have that because I love to connect with people, hear their problems, and then see if I can help them or if I know someone who can help them. So feel free to connect with me, Manessa.tv or Manessa.com.
Oh, that's perfect. And I feel like you have such great wisdom. Like all this stuff that you're sharing, I'm like, oh, I'm making mental notes of what they're saying so I can make sure to really capture it. But with that being said, like what's one piece of career advice you'd give to someone? Like if there was like your golden rule, what would that be?
Trust your gut. My golden rule would be trust your gut. I will tell you that when I look back on my life and I think about the mistakes that I made, they were because I didn't trust myself because there's a story that we're all told about the way things are supposed to be. And one of the things that I've discovered, and this is also why I kind of had to shut my business down and stuff, because I was helping people on too small a scale. When I started to realize how big the problem actually is, like how it penetrates so many different people's lives, I felt a need to make the the scale bigger, right? And so the advice that I get, and I think what I found most of all in all of the women I've worked with, and I typically work exclusively with women, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't reach out. Just typically that's what who I work with. That they have a feeling and they don't trust it. Right. Mm-hmm. And what they're coming to me for is typically not to tell them what's wrong. It's actually to validate what they already know is wrong. And so in some cases, tactically, they need me to tell them because they may not necessarily know how to solve an exact problem. But for the most part, you're very intuitive. You know what's going on. So if you're in a career or a job where you feel uncomfortable, and I mean uncomfortable in like, everything seems fine, I just don't want to be here, and I'll just do my work or whatever, that's when I want you to reach out to me for sure. Because I guarantee you this is even better advice. I promise you, you always have options. No matter what anybody tells you, yes. You always have options. You can find another job. You can find another place. You may not know how to do it, but the lie that we are always told is that we don't have options. We just need to put your nose to the grind, do the thing. Whatever you want to do, you have options. I will help you find them.
Oh, I love that. And I think that's so important to remember, because I feel like I've experienced this myself, but it's like I almost feel stuck and I'm like, well, I've always done it this way, so that means I have to continue doing it this way. But I think that's such an important reminder that you share, that it's like, just because you've done something for X amount of years doesn't mean you need to continue doing it that way for another X amount of years. You can be able to find another option that really supports you in what you're looking to do.
Well, that was that's so good that you said that, because that it was the unbecoming part that Sherry talks about, right? Because like you said, oh my God, the story of my life. I've always done it this way. I've always done it this way. And then I realized I had to stop doing everything the way I had done it before. And because all of it had come from conditioning from other people over the years, right? And I was trying to figure out what I wanted. And the way that I had been doing things was the way I was taught, right? And who taught me? Certainly not me. So I love that. It's such it's delicious.
I feel like I need to change that quote out with that. Oh, I love this. Vanessa, I know this is something that you've prepared, so I'm really excited to hear your answers, but I know you've been thinking about what your favorite local businesses are to support. So what would those be?
Okay, so there's a few. So I'm going to do, all right, so there's one, Honey Baby on, so good. I love Honey Baby. The bartenders there are amazing. The people are great. The company is great. The food is great. Their drinks are great. It's fabulous. Oh, you know what? One of their drinks is like, what is it called? Cure for Pain. They make it extra spicy for me. And it's brutal jalapeno. It's delicious. Definitely get it.
I love their espresso martinis as a plug.
Oh my God. Those are good too. Oh my God. Absolutely. And then the other one is Mother Crew. It's on that same road down the street. So it's over by, it's like right at the corner behind the Pilgrim Hall. It's around the Pilgrim Hall area. And they collect work from local artists. So they have some fabulous stuff. They've got candles and clay creations and notebooks and crystals. Like, it's just so much beautiful artwork. I actually realized I have a lot of it in here that I should have pulled out, but it's really beautiful stuff. And so if you are looking for really, like, if you like my background or anything therein, at Mother Crew will have pretty much what you need there. It's fabulous. I love Mother Crew. And what I love most about Mother Crew was that I walked into it and someone that I had coached 7 years ago up when we were in like Franklin and Waltham, like up and around, I walk in and she's sitting there and I was like, oh my God. And she's like, and I was like, what are you doing here? She goes, this is my place. And, I was like, oh my God, that's crazy. And this was a while back. So it's like, it's just actually really fun how the South Shore is very tiny.
Full circle moments, lots of them.
Oh, and then lastly, 1620. I love 1620. Raquel is a member of the SSWBN, and they have really, 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 really good chicken parm sliders.
Oh, good to know.
They're so good. Like, I went, and now I want to go back, now that I've mentioned them, to eat more.
I love that. I know you shared your links earlier, but I'd love if you could just reshare where people can find you online in case they'd like to connect with you further or learn more about what you do and how you can support them.
Absolutely. So the place that you probably want to go is manessa.tv. That's my YouTube channel. It's where everything starts. I post everything there. So if you start there, you'll be able to get anywhere else. But if you're active on LinkedIn, you can also find me on LinkedIn and just shoot me a DM.
Perfect. And I will link all of those in the show notes so that way our listeners can click through and connect with you from there. But thank you so much for being such a fabulous guest today, Manessa.
And you're such an awesome host. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Right Here in Mass. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social media, and share our podcast with your network. See you next week.